Hello, and welcome to Python 411, computer programming for everybody. Well, today it is my great pleasure to bring to you an interview with Gerald Spreer, a Python hacker of Buda, Texas, who has created a brand new open source project called The Maker. And it is a web content system for websites written entirely in Python. And it is client-side so that you can make your changes and then upload via FTP. It is easy to use, I think easy to understand and contribute to, and it is a fascinating story of how you can create wonderful Python programs. And I'm going to bring the interview to you. His program, The Maker, can be found at www.makercms.org. And so now here is the interview with Gerald Spreer of Buda, Texas.
Personal background just a little bit, because you're from the Netherlands?
So I'm from Germany.
From Germany, yeah. Okay, well, a lot of Python hackers are from Europe, I have discovered, and some of the main people that I have worked with have been from the Netherlands or Germany, so I don't know why Python seems to be more popular in Europe than in the United States almost. But what caused you to come to the United States?
Well, I am a missionary for a Christian nonprofit organization, and we work with homeless people here in Austin. And our organization is in the field since 15 years, usually in the Philippines,
right,
doing drug rehabilitation with heroin addicts.
Wow.
So that brought me to the United States. And this is also some of the reason that I got involved with programming again, because I'm responsible for the PR in our church here, and so I have very limited time.
Oh, I can imagine.
The challenge was to get a lot of stuff done in limited time. So.
Yeah, I did see in going over your website, or actually you have at least two websites that I've gone through, and I saw that you work with the homeless, and it's really impressive. I am always amazed when I see that we have homeless people in the United States. I live in Connecticut, and we do have. And as I travel the country on business, I can't help but see that there are homeless people out there, and it's amazing. Do you have that situation in Europe to the same extent?
Well, the social system in Europe is a little bit better than here in the United States.
Right.
I hope you're not recording this.
Yeah, no, I am, but that's okay.
And so if you lose your job and if you get in trouble, then usually the government takes pretty good care of the people.
Right.
And so, and also the climate is not, well, I know there's homeless people in Washington too, and it's getting very cold in the winter, but the climate in Texas is so moderate that it's pretty easy to out on the streets and
sleep
in the woods somewhere. And we have poor people in Germany and we have homeless too, but it's not to this extent.
Yeah, I think in the United States there are extremes. There are a lot, there are very, very wealthy people, but there's also, you can fall very far because the social net doesn't necessarily catch you. So I admire the work you're doing there, and I do hope that some people check out your material on your website about that topic too. But to get to the topic of programming, you're not a professional programmer, I take it. It's a hobby with you. And did you have any formal training in computer science in school?
Well, I grew up in East Germany, which was communist. So I was 16 years old, so I got a pretty good memory of that. And what they did when I was in school, they had a microcomputer out called KC-85.
I don't know that one, but that was Eastern Europe, I guess.
Yeah, and it was actually a clone of the Spectrum. And so later on, when the war came down, they found out that it was all basically stolen from the Western industry. But they were very busy getting people trained in using these backward, but at least everybody had to take basic programming in school.
Interesting. We're a very good educational system. You know, a personal note, but the company I worked for until very recently, we had a factory in what used to be East Germany, but just south of Berlin in a town called Teltow. And so I got to know, I traveled there quite a bit and got to know people. And it was remarkable that the general level of education was very high and very, very interesting place. But now when you, when did you get involved in programming as a hobby? How long ago was that? And sort of how did that come about?
That was in 93, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm also a musician.
Oh.
That was my hobby. Well, it's a hobby too. But
mm-hmm. What instrument?
Yeah, and I bought an Atari ST because of its MIDI capability.
Yes, yes.
But the program was that my keyboard, like the e-piano,
mm-hmm.
was not advanced enough to use it. So it
right.
had only one MIDI channel and was
sure.
not the right tool. So then I checked out the games who were bundled with it, and I didn't like it too much. And they had also a basic interpreter on it.
Mm-hmm.
And then very soon I started to play around with that, doing draw lines and
yeah.
all this stuff. And then I got some discs with demos on it,
mm-hmm.
Written in assembly language. And then I got in contact with some people who were very active in the demo scene in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started out there as a musician doing like module files,
okay.
Pro Tracker.
Right.
And then I had a guy in our group who was still is a very good programmer, and he taught me to use assembly language to a certain extent.
Wow, yeah. Python must seem like a dream compared to assembly language.
And yeah, then I did that for quite a while. And we also had, when Atari brought the Jaguar
mm-hmm.
out,
yep.
we had a small, we joined a small company in Germany who was going to develop games for
mm-hmm.
the Jaguar.
Mm-hmm.
And the funny thing about this company was that they even developed their own SDK,
mm-hmm.
even the hardware for it.
Wow.
And so we started learning, like, program the chips on the Jaguar
mm-hmm,
and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But then Atari went out of business.
Right.
And so we totally quit that. This friend of mine and I just didn't do anything at all after that. Then I bought a PC. I was not too much satisfied with Windows.
Yeah.
And then I think in 97 I got hooked up with Linux.
Yes.
And then it became interesting again.
Yeah, so that's a great hobby, Linux.
So then I spent several years figuring out how the system works and what is a makefile and all this stuff, and try a little C.
Mm-hmm.
And I was looking at all kinds of programming languages. And I also used this 3D software called Blender
mm-hmm.
on a regular basis.
Yes.
And it has a Python scripting interface to it.
Right.
And with using Linux, you see Python everywhere, like
mm-hmm.
mod Python for Apache web server.
Right.
All these things. And then I actually started programming using the Bash shell.
Mm-hmm.
And but I was looking for a cross-platform language. Then I tried Java, but it didn't like it much. All these libraries, very confusing.
Right.
And then I one night I just had a look at Python, and I think the first thing that I tried was just...
How long ago was it that you started with Python?
Starting with Python was 1.5 years ago.
Oh, wow. Not very long.
No.
And already you've come out now with this open source package, the Maker, which I think you just did the first release on this week.
Yes.
And I downloaded it. It's a content management system for creating websites. tell us the history of that. Was it very difficult? You had to spend many, many hours on it?
Well, I started the Maker as a Bash script.
Oh, okay.
And first attempt was very simple. Just you put in your text on the writer at the command line, and then the script was just added on the top of a content block, and create a website out of it. So,
but now you have a really nice GUI. Mm-hmm. I guess using the PIL.
Yeah.
Personal Imaging Library. I think that's is that Frederick Lund that does that?
I think so.
And so you have to load that. That was really the only dependency. I loaded it on my Macintosh and on my Windows machine at work both, and the installation went quite well once I loaded the PIL. And it is, I think the thing I like best about it is that it's menu guided. So when I first, it says create a new project, and then it gives me a series of menus where I just fill in the information that it asked me for, and then it automatically creates the project. So it seems to me the ease of use is greater than almost any tool of this type I have seen. I'm very impressed, and I see you've already, it was released 2 days ago, and it looks like there's quite a few people who've downloaded already. I was checking on SourceForge this morning. Now, are your websites created using this tool? Or?
Yes.
Yes, okay.
Yeah, my website, or all the websites I manage, are created and maintained using the Maker.
And what are your websites? Let's give the URLs to those. And I know www.sprenet, sprenet.com.
sprenet.de.
Okay. And
your
personal website.
In German language.
Yes. Yes, it's mainly in the German language. And then what are your other websites?
The other website is www.makercms.org.
Mm-hmm.
And
is that the home then of the Maker?
That's the home of the Maker. And then the website of the ministry I'm working with is www.hfan.org.
And I do recommend that people check that out also. It's quite interesting. So I think you'll get a lot of people using this. What are your future plans? Are you going to continue to develop the Maker? I mean, it's perfectly functional as it is, but just wondering if you have future plans for it.
Yeah, I have a whole list of things I want to implement, and I want to keep it cross-platform.
Yes.
If I was thinking about switching it to the Mac completely using WebKit and getting the HTML editor part to a total what you see is what you get.
Right.
But though WebKit is not available for Windows and for Linux, I don't know about it. Maybe it is, but I don't think so. So I want to keep it cross-platform.
I like the idea of keeping it cross-platform. I think it's very important. It's a very nice thing. And now the GUI it uses WXPython?
Yes.
Yes, which is my favorite these days. In fact, some people, listeners will recall that I've talked about FireDrop, which is a content management system that I use, which is open source, that does some of the same purposes. But I think yours is even easier. The Maker is, to get up and started very, very quickly would be even faster than FireDrop because it has, like I say, these menus to walk. Even if a person knew nothing about Python, I believe they could set up a website using the Maker very easily. Whereas with FireDrop, it's, you know, I think it's very, that most of the functionality is exposed through Python-type functions. So very interesting. Any other projects that you have in mind, or are you going to focus most of your efforts on the Maker for the time being?
I think I'm going to focus on the Maker for the time being, and there's going to be a lot more functions added to it.
Any functionality in particular you'd like to mention?
Especially, like, if you... Right now, you go in the editor, you type in your content, and you can mark it and just put the tags around it by clicking on the HTML button.
Right.
And I want to, especially if you like talk, some content, and you want to make it a link, then there's a dialogue popping up. And in this dialogue, it should be possible to have your favorite links as bookmarks. And so if you have a link that you use all the time, you can just click on it and put it there. And things like that. Just want to make it more.
Sounds like making it more and more easy to do more and more things. And I think that will attract people. And probably you need to publicize it. So I hope this podcast helps get people interested in it. I think it's also a project. One thing that I would comment on is that it probably would be something that Python programmers could study the source code and maybe contribute ideas or even code to the Maker project. So if anyone out there is looking for a project, this would be another one that would be very interesting to work on, I think. Especially as it is new, relatively, it would be good to get started in as one of the first helpers to Gerald. So I think if people want to get in touch with you, what is the best way? Your email address?
My email address, yeah.
Could you give that?
It's Gerald. At hfan.org.
Okay. And I'll put this in the show notes also, but I think it was good to give that out. What was the most difficult part of on a project like this? And you must have run into some difficulties that caused you to be concerned. What could you give us one or two of the hardest ones and how you solved them?
Well, the most hardest part, I started the Maker in Kindle.
Okay.
And then after half a year, I did a complete makeover, switching to WXPython. And at first, it was all in one file, not much object-oriented.
I see.
And then I put it all into pieces. And so nowadays, the main module is core.py, and there's all the main functions included in there. And then and the GUI is totally something different.
That is so interesting to me because when I started out, I tried to put – I always wanted to have one big file that did everything. And I knew from my reading and the Usenet that Python, you were supposed to have, modules. But I just thought, I want it all together. But it doesn't work very well that way in the long run, does it? So now I've finally gotten used to the right way to do it. Why did you switch from Tkinter to WXPython?
Well, to be honest, the main reason was because I wanted to have a splash screen. And but I also like the styled text editor control, which is based on Tkinter. And that was I wanted to have like. Syntax highlighting?
Oh, yes, syntax highlighting.
Yeah, that's what I...
So you use Scintilla, which is that an IDE or a text editor? Or?
That's ported to WXPython, and in WXPython it's STC control or styled text control.
Right.
And that was a very hard one to use, talking about difficulties. And the other difficulty that I found was using sizers.
Yes.
It was very challenging, and especially because I use a BOA constructor.
Oh, you do use BOA constructor?
Yeah.
Interesting. that project has been around. I've been in Python as a hobbyist for 6 years, and it was certainly there. I looked at it when I first got started, and it was very enticing because it draws the GUIs automatically. But I also felt I didn't use it much because I felt learning it was quite a chore. And I did hear about bugs also. Yeah. But you did manage to complete your project using BOA Constructor.
Yeah.
Great. But, there are other options. I mentioned recently that I have just started using something called SPE, which is a free open source IDE, and it has a GUI painter called WXGlade that comes with it. So it's also a nice tool for WXPython programming. So
So the sizers, they were a big challenge.
Yeah. Any advice to people out there learning to use sizers in WXPython?
Read the documentation.
You know what? If I had taken that advice on almost every programming project I've ever tried, I would have been so much better off. Just read that documentation.
Again and again, read it again.
Yeah,
again.
And it's so tempting to just jump in and try to do something, but the documentation is really the key. Read the documentation. So any other general advice to someone relatively new to the language who's thinking of starting a significant project, programming in Python, anything you would do differently looking back or not? Just wondered if you have any encouragement for folks getting ready to start a project.
Well, the best advice I could give is start using object orientation as soon as possible, and which requires you to read and documentation and learn, and maybe it's getting slower in the beginning.
Yep.
But the effort
very interesting.
So much better.
Interesting that you chose that. I've had several people who listen to this podcast email me privately and suggest or ask that they would like to hear a podcast on object orientation. And so I have something in the works that is a very detailed podcast to try to help walk some people through that. More to be said on that later. But interesting, because it does make things so much easier for major projects, I think, to use the object orientation.
Especially things like inheritance.
Mm-hmm.
This is just great. For me, as an all-time assembler programmer, this was something really. I always scared away from object orientation. I always thought I will never be able to learn this. There's so much code.
It can be intimidating.
Yes.
I know, and yet once your mind gets a grasp of it, it almost simplifies things.
Yes.
So I heartily endorse your recommendation. When I started out, my original programming was many, many years ago before anyone thought about object orientation. So like you and like many people, I was scared off by it. But I think it's really something that once you get the hang of it, it makes things better. So I encourage everyone in the audience to download the Maker and to email you and give you suggestions and helps and to check out your websites. Any other topics you would like to cover while you have the ear of the audience, so to speak?
Well, first I want to thank you for your podcast.
Mm-hmm.
To me it was a lot of help.
Great.
To listen to this, especially to the earlier podcast about object orientation.
Right.
And it's just good, not just good to read about things, but also to hear about it.
Yes, I think hearing and reading and then doing, looking at, forces your mind to cover the same material in different ways and reinforces everything. So it's kind of interesting. Maybe someday I'll have a video podcast too, so people can. I don't know, but don't really have any direct plans to do that. So do you hang out on the Usenet, on the Python news group some?
Not too much.
Yeah. It can take up a lot of time, I can attest.
Yeah.
But maybe you'll start a mailing list for the Maker someday soon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and I want to encourage people to download the Maker to try it. And I'm sorry for documentation still being in draft mode. I'm working on that. And if anybody has a question or needs support,
sure. And like I say, I was able to set up basic projects with no problem just by the menus walking me through it. But as you say, people can send questions directly to you.
So
go ahead.
I might add one more thing. The next version is going to come out, I think, in a few months.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll be able to select a template for your project.
Mm-hmm.
So by now, there's a default template coming with the Maker, and you cannot select, and it's very basic, but I intend to make the next version with templates, so you if you are not familiar too much with CSS, then you can just select your template and go with it. So I think that's going to be very neat.
That would be very helpful.
And there's going to be the opportunity for people to contribute.
Yes.
Maybe I'm doing just a template design or something like that in addition to the maker.
Right. That sounds great. And you know what? With you being down there in Texas near Austin, maybe I'll see you next February or so at the PyCon in Dallas.
Yeah, I plan on going there.
That would be wonderful.
Last time I was in Germany, so I couldn't make
right,
it.
Right. Well, I look forward to meeting you because I hope to go next year again for my second one. So. And I thank you very much for sharing your work, the maker, with us as open source, and also for sharing your time to talk to the audience here of Python 411. And maybe in the future we could come back and chat again as the maker continues to develop. So
this would be great.
Okay. Okay. For now, that is Python 411, computer programming for everybody. And I'll be back next week with another podcast.
Okay, well, that is the interview with Gerald Spreer, creator of The Maker, and that can be found at www.makercms.org. Now, next week, we're going to have a very different podcast, a tutorial. It's going to be the longest podcast yet, and so I'm warning you in advance, it's well over 1 hour. Now, that's very unusual. I try to keep these Python 411 podcasts under a half hour at all times, but this one is about object orientation, and I've had more requests for more learning material about object orientation and object-oriented programming than probably any other subject. And this is, next week, a podcast which is a edited version of a very, very scholarly presentation by, I'm going to keep that part just a little secret, but I think you'll find it very useful, very educational. And, hey, you can always listen to it in sections. I thought about breaking it up into one or two sections, but you can do that on your own. You don't have to listen to it all in one sitting. And I'm sure you'll find it very good. And so until then, this is your host, Ron Stevens, of Python 411, computer programming for everybody.